Rescue for Workers is a program dedicated to exposing exploitation and helping workers who are mistreated, abused, underpaid and facing injustice in their workplace.
Presented by Utu for Workers Union, we're your hosts, Matt McCartan and Izzy Kane.
Kia ora, welcome to Utu for Workers Hour, an hour dedicated to hearing real workers' stories and winning justice. I'm your host, Izzy Kane. Thanks for tuning in. It's great to have you with us. Just for our listeners, or our new listeners, Utu for Workers Union is a campaign union fighting to end workplace exploitation and abuse in Aotearoa, New Zealand. We publicly expose and campaign against exploiters and abusers. Our key goal, however, is to always protect our workers and act in their best interest. Now, our membership is open to any worker, be they an employee, a subcontractor, self-employed worker, students, retirees, even those not in paid work. If you do have a union on your work site already, you can still join ours as a supporter. Information on how to become a member and the sign-up form can be found on our website, utu.org.nz/join. Now that's utu.org.nz/join. And we really do encourage everyone to sign up. If you currently have a case, a workplace issue, or need representation or an employment advocate, there is an online case assessment form that you can fill out also on our website, utu.org.nz/help. If for any reason you are unable to use these online services, we do also have a free phone number. That's 0800 368 000. So just give us a bell and we'll get back to you. So now that our listeners have a slightly better idea about who we are, we'll get started with the show. We have a few case updates and a couple of new case interviews to cover, so I'll hand over to Matt now to get the updates underway.
Kia ora, everyone. Thanks, Izzy. I've got Armin, who's a worker advocate with the project.
Kia ora, Matt.
Thank you for coming in. And I want to talk to you about a case. It's kind of almost criminal. You know, we have a lot of employment thing. I'm sure this is a big issue. And,
yeah.
We're scratching the surface. And this week, which we'll talk about, is that we got a long letter from the employers. I use the word loosely. The employers, the exploiters, lawyers from their Queen Street law firm, and they're a big firm, so
yeah.
They think they can intimidate us, but I assure you they don't. But look, I want to. We have addressed this before because being around and coming, but it's sort of upping up, right? So take us briefly about where this started. This was a student.
This was a Chinese student,
right?
Who.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Just for our listeners, right, this is someone who paid money for a job, paid $12,000.
$12,000.
Was given a job. It didn't really exist.
No.
Wasn't paid.
No.
When she asked for money, she went back to China on a break.
Yeah.
Then the employer found ways to have her not come back.
Yeah.
By not issuing her the letters, and then said he wouldn't pay her wages or her money back, right? And he hasn't heard back, right?
That's right.
That's essentially it.
Yeah. That's the gist of it.
So just to add anything to that listeners should know.
Yeah, so there was a lot of WeChat messages. There was a third party who received the money.
So when you say third party, right, that they had agents,
yeah,
if you like, at university, students themselves,
yeah,
right? So they would go out and approach students and said, I can get you a job.
Which would get you your residency.
Resident, right. And for a fee of $12,000, which then paid to, who was it paid to, this money?
A job seeker agent.
Job seeker agent, which is, we can't name names on here, but it's on the website. So it's all very convoluted, right? Seems like a real system's going on here.
Yeah,
right?
and in the messages, it said the reason we're doing this is to kind of
avoid the law.
Avoid the law.
So this is a criminal action, in my view. This worker goes to the job, doesn't exist, doesn't get paid, keeps asking for pay, got so stressed, had to go home, have a break, then tried to get back in the country, and the employer didn't want to have a bar of it, right?
Yeah.
Because get rid of the problem.
Right? Yeah.
So we have been, you have been representing her and engaged with them. So just that really it's the next phase of it now.
Yeah.
Right? So they've got their, what you found out these companies didn't really exist, and the emails have been cut off with one or two of them and all sorts of things.
Yeah, so the place that the worker worked at wasn't officially registered as a company until a month after she had left, until you know, she was back in China.
Once she started asking, so they go and register it since, right?
Yeah.
And so I think we, because it's a public broadcaster, right, we have certain ethics
right.
how we raise these issues of detail. But I think it's safe to say we can say this, right? This is in Auckland, and this
is in
the business within the St. Luke's Mall. So it is kind of mainstream, right?
I think not St. Luke's Mall, but in the St. Luke's area.
So this is right in the middle of our community.
Yeah.
Right? This is in
Central Auckland.
So it is a... It seemed like a scam to me, but you have some evidence, or at least some information now, that this is pretty widespread. This has been going on for some time.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's important is we follow the money. You know, where's all this going? So when the worker complained, the person who had set the job up for her, the agent, she gave her
cut back.
Her cut, which was how much?
Think $3,000.
So these agents, these spotters, are going around other students, and for that they get $3,000.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a racket there. Right?
Yeah.
And they're doing it deliberately to get around the law.
Yeah.
And they get this outfit was called, it was a career type company, you know, a training company, which it got paid to and seen, but there was no training and nothing. No website, no nothing, right?
Yeah.
And that it was just someone's home in the leafy suburbs of what suburb? Remuera, I can tell you. Oraki Drive, right?
Yeah.
Right? So that's over where the rich people hang out. So they did that, and then we wrote to them, and we published an article on it on our website. And so now they've got their pointy-haired sort of lawyers who've got too much money to write us threatening letters, threatening all sorts of things. And I just sort of laugh at them. And
threatening defamation.
Yeah, they say, telling the truth is not defamation. They don't like it.
Yeah.
So this is what these criminals always do, you know, that kind of thing. Because people are trained to be frightened of lawyers. Right? I'm not. We're not, you know. And so, of course, you made the comment when you read the letter about how amateur it was, you know. So they obviously should pay their lawyers more because they're putting the juniors onto it. But anyway, what they're doing is saying, withdraw the story or we will sue.
Yeah.
Right?
And denying all wrongdoing.
Of course they do, because they're liars as well as criminals. But now they think they can buy their way out. So what we will respond to them, but what they don't understand is our allegations are criminal. Right? And so this does require us now, if we're going to take the next step, and you're in touch with the young woman who was stolen from, she's still trapped in China?
Still in China.
Right. So what we have to do is bring in the state agencies. If they want to go down this path, because they're right, if we make an allegation and can't back it up, then it is kind of, it's not ethical to do that, mind you. You've got it in good faith. So we will now consider the following options. Contact the police investigation, our unit, because this is fraud.
Yeah.
It's fraud. Money's been laundered of people to break the law. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two is these workers are promised a visa, and it will meet the visa standards, right?
Yeah.
So that is a breach of the law, correct? So that requires us to contact the immigration fraud squad. And just for listeners to understand, we have an arrangement with the Immigration New Zealand, all these agencies. If we work with them on cracking down on these extortions, they don't touch the workers, right? Because they're victims too. And so that's...
Absolutely.
And that's important, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
Yeah. And then the third thing is, of course, they're engaging employees and not putting them through to the books, which means taxes aren't being paid. Again, that's the employer's legal responsibility. It's nothing to do with the worker. And then the fourth one is the Labour Inspectorate.
Yeah.
Is that they have a contract, they're supposed to have work, they're supposed to keep their wages and time books, they're supposed to pay the wages, et cetera, right? And so what's important, because we know this is only hitting the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Right? And so once the state agencies get involved, and that's what we will do, is work with them on the condition that no worker is to be harmed. And with the change in government, and well, it's been four years now, there's a different culture, is that they go after the employers or the ones who are initiating this these crimes, where in the old days you used to just blame the worker and put them on the plane and get them out of the country, right? And that no longer is the practice of which they now conduct. So I just want people to know, please come forward. You know, we can't solve these problems and crack down on this if people are too scared to come forward. And in the past, that was the case. They were too nervous because the consequence was they would be deported. Mm. But that's not the case now.
Yeah.
Mm. So we will respond to, well, you will respond. You're the lead on this case, brother, but I certainly want to assist in this and respond back from there. But what these employers don't understand, or these criminals, we don't let things go. Right? We just keep going. So we are committed to justice. We have people like yourself who are tenacious and will just keep going.
That's right.
Put your law degree to great work, and you can engage with the lawyers from the other side. And but the same thing, you know, we're here for justice.
Yeah.
And they may be able to spend a lot of money on lawyers. We have right on our side. Thanks, Armin, for that. We've got you sort of later up on the show, so it'll be good to catch up on another crime you're working on.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for that update, Armin and Matt. So, Matt, I hear you also have some other updates that you wanted to share with our listeners today.
Sure. Again, when I think of updates, and there's a lot of cases we're doing, and I always want to bring the ones that have interest to people, which we can learn something from. What we're starting to learn is we do publish a lot of the articles, all the cases we're working on our website.
That's utu.org.nz for listeners, utu.org.nz.
Indeed. And what was interesting, we had a mediation with the employer and their lawyers, and they had all the columns that I'd written about their case put out in front of them. And they were
good to see people are going to the website.
Oh, well, they do not like it. They did not like it. And it's funny, they won't engage, but they turn up at those mediations because it's in confidence. You see, all those things I can't go on is what was discussed in those meetings. So by law, they're confidential. But I can say that they had all the articles in, and they were not happy. So that makes me happy, because telling the truth and showing people what they're doing is really important. That's part of our campaign as a union. We will name names. We will not let people get away with it. Why I'm raising the case today about this case has been going on for 12 months, and what's important that we want employers and workers to know that we won't let a case go.
No.
We will just keep going and going. So 12 months, they've got our columns in front of them, which is good, because, you know, I intend to hold the mirror up to their behaviour. And so that's that. The other case I want to address, another one which has been going on for a very long time, this is a case of abuse and bullying down in Christchurch. And that is a nationwide company. And that is, again, just want to dig in and just more bullying and more bullying and more bullying. Even I wrote a letter to the employer last night, or the lawyer of the employer, about they continue to bully staff, continue to threaten them. In fact, the owner was telling other staff about the person we are representing is that they'd better watch it, because I know people. It's physically, you know, that's almost on the border on criminal. So I wrote to the lawyer last night and said, you better keep your dog on the porch, because you don't want to go to that, because next time I'll make a police complaint. So, you know, this is the world we're in. But again, this has been going on for a while, and we won't let this go. I just want people to know is that we will never let a case drop until we get justice. And so,
we're here to protect the worker first and foremost.
Always protect. That's why I can't name
the
workers. We never name the workers, because they're victims. And when we make a case against them, even in the public court, we go for confidentiality because of the victims, because they threaten them. And they tell them you'll never work, and of course people are tied, particularly with visa workers, of course, they're tied to that employer, and when they lose the job, they're vulnerable about their status within the country. So we go out of our way to do that. But that's hopefully can be resolved, but man, you know, these owners, mate, they've been arrogant for so long, and they've been getting away, and it's all their ego. And they just can't help themselves. The other thing about the case down in Christchurch, I formalised, so the worker was so scared, right? So we put the case on hold for several months whilst they moved to another town, got a new job. They were traumatised, a young child, new family, etc. So I respected their wish and put it on hold, but now I've re-engaged. And I formally put a claim to the employer through their lawyer, a very modest position to be honest. And they come back about our campaign about exploitation against exploiters. They're saying, oh, you're blackmailing us because you're asking us for things. I said, oh, for God's sake. And I said, no, you can chew gum and walk at the same time. You know, it's that we will run a campaign against exploitation and abuse at work, and we will name names in our direct communication on our website. But at the same time, we will negotiate to resolve cases. You do both. So what this employer or their lawyers come back and say, we won't be intimidated. You know, we will meet with you and we'll go to a mediation, but you must stop saying things about us. I said, no. Because the legal system in this country is, right, go into the system and wait for 6 months. Right? That means they say, oh, you don't say a thing. No. Because they can meet with us tomorrow. No problem. They can meet with us tomorrow. And I told them in the letter last night, I said, just, we can get on a call. We can have a meeting tomorrow. So you don't need, I'm not waiting months and months. You can forget it. So that's that. The other case I want to talk about is about a young woman who had been assaulted by an assailant in a shop when she was by herself. She was the manager of a retail shop. And that she fought him off and he ran off, but she obviously was traumatised.
It was a particularly harrowing case, this one.
Yeah, terrible case. And phoned the boss. Boss said, you know, okay, well, that said, you know, well, someone would come and see her in due course, which they did. But no one followed up. They said they would call the police, they would sort it all out, never did. So she was very traumatised because a week after the assailant came back into the mall, because this is a shop in a mall. So she obviously was not in a good space and then raised these issues with the owners of the stores in an email. They got her in the next day with four of them in the room, her manager, her kind of senior managers and the owner. And within 6 minutes, she no longer had a job. Then they claimed it was a rare resignation, but there's a text from the worker to the boss saying, I haven't resigned. And so, oh, no, you should have, you know. So that's the game. Then the worker went to the cops. They were horrified. Then some of her friends, they started to campaign for her, to support her. Then they sued her.
And
they
sued. God.
And they sued her for $30,000. And that's when we got involved. Mm. So they backed off on the suing. But she was so traumatised by it all, she just wanted to go on hold. But again, you see, I don't want to let things go. This is an outrageous, contemptible approach by an employer. You know, that a young woman has been assaulted, sexually assaulted, it could have been rape. Wasn't reported to the cops, no follow-up. She was traumatised in 2 weeks when she tried to raise about the way they treat the staff. She got the sack. This is a company that promotes clothing for women to make yourself feel
better.
And then
they end up suing her.
And they sued her. So I was... she just wanted it all to go away, right? But we wanted her to take a break and rest up and just say, look, you know, because in the end, this is always about justice. And our thing is that I always look at people and say... And when you're on your deathbed, this is my kind of thing, right? When you're on your deathbed and you think back to instances which have traumatised you, what do you wish that you had done? And I know that, look, common sense, but also my experience and about human beings, and as listeners are listening, they know it to be true. You think of your moments in your life where you were so unfairly treated and or traumatised, you want to do something about it. You know, and our thing is that we will stand with people. We will stand with victims and we will fight with them because it's just so important that people's mana and their self-esteem is maintained and that justice is given. So that's what we're about. So this thing, we've filed the case. We have, she's back, you know, she came and saw us this week and has given us the go-ahead to proceed with the case, and we will. And we will be more publicly engaged on this in due course. But I'm very... pleased that, you know, we don't let things go, and I'm very pleased that she's come back and I saw her, she came in, you know, we've got, Brina's going to lead the case up on that, but, you know, she's in a far better space, so even though it's been nearly 6 months, you know, the important thing is we don't let it go,
no.
And we will keep it there, and when they're ready, we're ready. Mm. So anyone who's out there listening to this, young people, you know, how they're treated in, you know, the hospitality and retail evictions and so on and so on. Anyone who feels they've been abused and supported, like, we will help you. And the final thing I just want to raise, this is kind of more of a historical one. I settled a case for a young worker who was gay, and they had a homophobic work site, you know, the types, construction company, not that I blame construction companies, but the bosses who owned it, you know, the way they would smear gay people, not knowing that he was gay. He didn't want to say he was gay because, you know, he was too scared because of the way they talked about gay people. So in the end, he just couldn't hear breakdown, sort of, basically. So I negotiated with the employer, you know, to kind of do the right thing and settle up. They can't let it go. You know, so even though, you know, they just resented the fact as they were caught out. So they've been going around telling everyone is that this worker was sacked because of drugs.
I'm not aware of this.
This is just new. So they went round. This is months afterwards. They've been telling people, you know, why this worker went, oh, it's because he got caught with drugs. In fact, it was not that at all. And so I'm taking that case up. So, you know, even when you're standing up for yourself, you know, there are just bullies and bullies and bullies that can't help themselves. So that's a thing I feel particularly upset about. And they got off light last time, you know, because the kid was just too traumatized, just wanted to leave. So, you know, he got some money. It wasn't a great deal, but, you know, he got some money to move on, and it was a resignation and thing. But no, can't help himself. So now they go around smearing him. And so I will follow up. So even after we've done an agreement, we will keep going. And I just want people to know that's our kaupapa. You know, we're for justice, and we will stay in for as long as it takes.
Thanks for that, Matt. So there's a definite theme emerging then from our interviews today, in that we don't give up and never let a case go. And those updates were a lot to take in. So I think it's about time for a song. For our listeners, every week I play a song or two from the progressive movement throughout history in a segment called Songs of Struggle. I look into the history behind these songs and see if I can find the link which pulls us all together and shows the fight continues on today in solidarity. It definitely ties into the show's theme and indeed our union's kaupapa of never letting a case go until we win justice. So for this next song, I've chosen a slightly different genre this week, a little bit of reggae by the legendary Bob Marley and the Wailers called Get Up, Stand Up. It's a call to action, and while it's not totally clear why Bob Marley wrote the song, you know, some believe it was following a trip to Haiti and seeing entrenched poverty, others simply believe it was because Bob was no stranger to poverty himself, coming from the trench town ghetto of Kingston, Jamaica, but the call to action is certainly clear. And from my research, I've gathered that Get Up, Stand Up must be known by just about every lefty or social justice advocate out there. And it's been covered and performed by the likes of Peter Tosh, Bunny Wailer, Bruce Springsteen, Tracy Chapman, Peter Gabriel, Sting, and many more legends beside. So here it is. Bit of reggae for your Wednesday afternoon. Bob Marley and the Wailers, Get Up, Stand Up.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up.
So that was Bob Marley and the Wailers' Get Up, Stand Up. Our next interview is with Anu Colotti, President of the Migrant Workers Association, and involves an unjustified dismissal and indeed standing up for our workers' rights. So I'll hand over to Matt again to get straight into it.
Thanks, Izzy. Hello, Anu. Thanks for coming in. The case I want to talk with you about is a case I think our listeners would be familiar with. Right? This is about someone who works for a big corporation and in a call centre, getting stressed and trying to manage their stress and isolation a bit. Performance starts to suffer, and then they're pulled in and then there's a problem. So I really want to talk a bit about this so that our listeners can think, gee, I've been in that situation. And then at the end of it, say how people can deal when they're in situations like this, or they know people who are in these situations. So tell us about this case.
So this is a well-known leading bank. And mm-hmm. our worker...
Another Australian bank.
Yeah, and most of them are here, I guess.
All of them.
Yeah.
Just about.
Yeah. So our worker was a call centre employee for this bank. So mm-hmm. our worker has worked for this call centre for 3 years, which mm-hmm. is a long time to give to an employer.
It's a solid time, yeah.
You'd also think that by that time an employee is very competent and proficient in their job, hopefully.
Yep,
3 years is a long time.
Yeah.
And also here, the workers who worked in call centres did work from home during lockdowns, various lockdowns we've had.
All right.
So
okay.
that is also very important in this case. So our worker, their stress levels started going up when they had to work in isolation at home. Because we also met... the worker's father, who'd observed their trajectory, how the son started being not their usual happy self.
So this is stress for people working from home. This is in a bank. Now, normally these call centres are huge, aren't they? This is a couple hundred or so, wouldn't it? I mean, they're like factories.
Yeah, absolutely. And then
chicken factories, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then you'd have your colleagues there to share your...
and all that. So people were going, so he's feeling the stress, and then what happens?
So then earlier this year, they are supposed to have misbehaved. That's what they're told by their employer. So that they're not told at the time. They suddenly called into a meeting, which then is a disciplinary meeting a few days down the line, I think within a week, and the employer is telling them that we are terminating your employment because you have bullied the customers, you have just not kept up the...
Okay, so this worker was actually dismissed.
Yes,
okay.
they were terminated.
They were terminated. I think what is disturbing to me was they were dismissed immediately.
Correct.
And they received no notice, right? So their contract has their month's notice. They didn't even get that, right? So what you're saying is that on Monday they got the letter.
That's right.
Saying come to a disciplinary.
Correct.
On Friday they came in. They were told the charges, you're not. They'd gone through all their files or through their...
Yes.
They, you know, listeners know that when you phone these call centres, right, they record the calls. So then they went through. There were some issues, not so serious in my view, to warrant it. But anyway, they say you've made a mistake and you've done this and you're a risk to us. So you're out the door for serious misconduct.
That's right. So, they were just walked off the premises without any notice.
Right.
And the sort of things that they were told they've done wrong. You're right. It's not... We don't think that they were sackable offences. You know, there are things like that they might have put the call on to another call centre staff, or they've been told that they have cut a customer halfway through the call. That was only, I think, on one occasion, but it's mostly that they are putting their calls onto other staff.
But they get about 200 calls a week, a normal call in those places, about 40 a day?
Easily. Probably more.
More. So they're dealing with a lot of calls, right?
Yes.
So they say they got one call.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you and I both, well, I'll talk about myself, right? If I wait on a line on a call centre and you wait and wait and wait, you've really got to bite your tongue as not to take it out on the worker on the other end, right? Because they're waiting for 10 minutes for a phone call and you go, oh, I've been waiting, and people will do that, right? But it's not their fault, you know?
No, it's not their fault.
But they're under enormous stress because they've got to remain polite the whole time, you know, and they're not allowed to respond because if they respond and they talk to you like you talk to them, then of course they get the boot. So it was one call, right? So, you know, we're human beings. So there's that. that. It seems there was not any steps before that, right? If someone is starting to not perform, right, you sit down with them and say, look, we think we've got an issue here.
Yeah, so the due process...
Been there for 3 years.
Due process appears to have not been followed. So, you know, instead of just terminating this worker like that, the right thing to do would have been address the issues. You know, if they had some sort of stress going on due to work or even due to their personal life, it needed to be dealt with. It needed to be addressed instead of just terminating.
Well, you'd think so, right? Because these banks, like, you know, like spending millions of dollars of our money on ads about how wonderful they are and how they care. Well, you know, the proof's in the pudding. Yeah. What I think concerns me about, or one of the things that concerns me about this, they've been investigating this for some time. Mm-hmm. He was not aware of it. Mm-hmm. So they knew if on their basis he was a risk, because they sacked him for serious misconduct. Mm-hmm. Right? So therefore, he must have already been doing it, but they left them with the customers right up till Friday.
That's right. You know, so, if it was such a serious offence, why wasn't he suspended while they were investigating?
So he's a trade unionist, right? It's a serious misconduct. But if you, what would normally, I just say to listeners, right, if your employer is saying it's serious misconduct, that is a sort of the stages where they say, you are now are to leave work while we do an investigation. Now, normally it's paid, in union site jobs they are. So you get suspended on pay whilst they do the investigation, right? They remove you from the situation. So if it's dishonesty, that's an instant dismissal if it's true. If you threaten someone physically, you know, you're out the door, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. But everything else is about, you know, we have a performance sort of issue. We think it could result in your dismissal. If it's a customer, your relationship with customers, we will suspend you whilst we do it. But didn't do that. So therefore, it can't have been that much of a risk.
No, and also our worker has never, ever in the 3 years had any customer complaints against him.
Right. So for a week, he's got, say, 40 calls a day. So he's talked to 200 customers in that week before he was dismissed immediately.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Without notice, without compensation, without being paid and out the door. Right. So this is pretty severe, right? So I've talked with the company just before we come on. So I talked to them. And it's all that, you know, I've got to kind of absorb it because, you know, it's in confidence. I'm trying to understand their view. Right. And, you know, you're just dealing with bureaucrats, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's all kind of, oh, we have a system. I said, but this is not serious misconduct. This is a performance issue. Now, this worker had stepped and asked for what they call EAP, Employee Assistance Program. Corporations, they have it, which is for people who are suffering from stress and anxiety because of the pressure of work. Mm-hmm. And he was on that.
Yeah.
That's right. And so that would send some warning bells to any company, right? If someone is not saying, so this is what this was about.
Mm-hmm.
So what companies do, they put in workers under enormous pressure to meet their KPI, you know, this is their key performance indicator, you know, they put their targets and pressure. Mm-hmm. And when workers then are stressed and are not co-hoping, they say, oh, you can get access to EAP and that's our job done. And if you still don't perform, well, you're out the door immediately. You think that absolves the stress. You know, I've sort of started this interview as a kind of a more of a karma, but as I kind of thinking about it more, I'm just thinking, this is outrageous. You know,
it is. And talking to the worker, I think it's not in this person's nature to be rude to others or be bullying people at the other end of the phone.
You've met the worker and the father, right?
Yes, I have.
And nice people.
Very nice. Yeah. I mean, if that was me instead of that worker, I would be very angry and I would be very animated, you know, because what I have just gone through. But he wasn't like that. So I don't think it's in his nature to be bullying customers at the other end of the phone.
I think this is an important thing. I think we should engage further on this because this is, you know, whether it's intentional or not, it's a culture of bullying by corporations of setting unrealistic expectations, put people in high stress positions, don't give them the support, and when they can't match, as someone who's been in for 3 years, not 3 months, been with 3 years, and then they just find a reason to dismiss them immediately, and it's callous, that person leaves without anything. You know, and so this is the ugly side of corporates.
Exactly.
You know, we'll keep in touch about this, Anu. So thanks for coming in today, and let's keep in touch about this.
Thanks for having me on the show again.
Thanks again, Anu. A pleasure to have you on the show as always. We're coming up to our final interview today, again with our worker advocate Arman, who gave us an update earlier on the show, back to tell us about another case he's working on, the Mahi Never Stops.
So we're back again with Arman. Great to have you back again for another round.
Good to be here.
I'm interested in this case you've got. It's a, I think listeners would know this thing goes on. They'll know people this is happening. So I want you just to explain what this is, and then maybe we can give some advice to listeners who can tell out their friends or themselves, know themselves about what they're doing there in these situations. So tell us what this is about.
Basically, it's unpaid wages.
Okay.
And we...
And you, so this is someone who worked for wages and wasn't paid for it, worked hours.
Yeah, so they were working roughly 10 hours extra a week.
So they were employed, so they were on how? So they were paid as an employee. So
they were paid as an employee.
They weren't paid for the overtime.
Yes, that's right.
So they were employed for about 30 or 40 hours a week?
40 hours.
For 40 hours. So they got that and they got paid. Right?
Yes.
And what was the wage rate for that?
It was... Minimum wage, slightly above.
That was $20 an hour.
Yeah.
Okay, so they'll get somewhere around about $800 a week.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Okay, gross, before tax. Okay, so I've got it. And then they were working these extra hours. They were required to work these extra hours. About 50 hours a week.
Yeah, that's right.
And so where was this?
This was in the lower central North Island.
Right. What sort of place is it? What's
a liquor store.
A liquor shop, of course it was. I'm sorry, listeners, we get a lot of these people. And how long were they working there?
Just under 3 years.
3 years. So if I took 10 hours on the current minimum wage, it's $20 an hour, so just for the sake of maths. 10 hours at $20, it's $200 a week, times 52 weeks a year, say about 10,000. 3 years, about 30 grand, potentially.
Potentially. Right?
And so this worker has been working for 3 years. So was this someone who was on a visa and too nervous to raise the issue, right? Of course, that's what it is.
And they were told to work these hours or you'd be fired.
Right, and because they're sponsored by the
employer.
Is there any record of them being told that, or is that just...
No, so the boss would verbally say this.
Yes, of course he does. And so what it is what we know to be true and what is you present as evidence in court. Right. So you know, I always believe the workers when they come. Right? It's almost 99% sense they are correct. It seems to be the reverse with these exploiters. It's 99.99% of them they tell lies. Okay. So the worker is still there, or
no? Worker's left now.
Okay. So that's why they raised the wage claim. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Look, this happens with people, right? And we encourage it too. Look, if they don't feel strong enough to raise it at the time because they're scared they'll lose their job, and you know their visas are tied to these rat bags. So, of course, they're going to be not going to raise it.
Yeah.
But I want people to know that wage claims, you can take wage claims 6 years. Is that right? Six years sort of after. So if you have a personal grievance, as you say, like if you have a dispute or a problem, what's the timeline on that to raise
that's
that
90 case? Days.
That's 90 days. But a wage claim is 6 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they can go back for 6 years.
Yeah. And with grievance as well, they can be extenuated.
They can be extended, but there's a general rule, right? And
general,
so they've got to have a special circumstances, not just because you couldn't be bothered doing it, now do it, right?
That's right.
There are people who might be trapped overseas or they are physically threatened and stuff like that. So that's exception. Okay, got that. So person's got another job, they know they've been stolen from, and, you know, learning to become a Kiwi way, you know, they can't do that to me and get my money. So they've approached you to help them. But what sort of evidence is there? Because the boss is just going to lie, isn't
he?
They're just lying.
So we know that the worker was working at a particular register, and we've got dozens of screenshots showing the time that transactions were made on this register.
Right, that's always...
Contradicting the roster.
So we've got a roster.
Yeah.
But then the worker's saying they were working more than the roster.
Yeah.
But that in itself is not going to be proven in a court.
No.
What you've got is you've got on the liquor machine, the till, is the hours or that person's name on the till.
Yeah.
Because they always put the name of whoever is doing the till, right?
Yeah.
And they print it out. And you've got that which shows he was working, well, he was present when all those hours were being worked.
Yeah.
So that'll stand up. And so you've got some samples there.
We do.
Over a period. The question will be, will a court accept that that was the pattern for 3 years.
Yeah.
You know, and so they'll make that judgment. But still, if you've got some of that, it's up to the employer now to disprove it.
Yeah.
Which they can't, really. And so then it'll only be a test as whether if the employer lies about that, then your argument will be in the authority, if we get that far. You say, well, if they lie about that, we argue they're lying about the whole lot. Which, of course, you know,
exactly,
it's kind of consistent. You
know? Yeah.
So you should win that. But let me raise it for the listeners. You know, so this is a straight claim, right?
Yeah.
It's a bit of one size fits all. It's 10 hours a week over 3 years. It's somewhere around, but just under 30,000 with the minimum wages in each year. But you will need to be a bit more specific, and there'll have to be some more work on that. But that's the ballpark number. What is important, and you and I discussed this before we came on, is what I want listeners to know, that if you're in a similar position, a lot of people are, about working extra hours, aren't you entitled to be paid?
Yeah.
The courts will rule that you get paid at least the minimum wage for hours which you worked unpaid, if you can prove it. Now, my advice to people is very simple. You all got cell phones. Yeah. You can use it as a tracker, right? If people can know how to put a tracker on, that's enough, because it'll show you as being at that place at that time. If you don't have that, you can just write down the hours you did each week. Like you start and your finish time by text, and then text it to yourself. Then you got that record. That's going to be enough, because if it shows that regularly each week you sent a text of hours you claimed you worked, Monday, you know, to Saturday, Sundays off, and you write down it just once a week, just make those notes. If the employer hasn't got any records, or we can prove they're wrong, then this will stand up in court. So just want people to know that you don't have to kind of, you know, have everything. See, what it shows is you were doing this right through the period. See, what we've got is a problem potentially with this worker. If they haven't got any records and they just kind of come at the end and they sort of, oh, I've got a claim, they've got some of the evidence with these shots and that, so that's good. But if a worker doesn't have that, it's almost impossible to prove.
Yeah.
But if you've been sending throughout the whole period notes to yourself, that's enough, you know, to show that it's, you know, it's been a pattern. And they will accept that you're too scared to do anything about it, because your visa relied on that employer, and you were told if you don't do it, you'll get sacked in this case. So this guy, this owner's a rat bag. What else about this case that you think that viewers would be helpful for them to know about?
Yeah, so just make sure to keep track of the extra hours you work and make notes of it at the time, I think is really important. And the fact that the employer was saying this stuff verbally as well.
Yes, yes. Well, you get some people, they actually record them, right? And that's what's good, right?
But not everyone
is brave enough to do that, or quick enough, or haven't thought it through.
Yeah.
But look, if you can get a recording of any employer threatening you or telling you what it is, that's gold.
Yeah. Right? Oh, and I've also spoken to former employees of this liquor store, and I'm very confident that everything the worker is telling me is true, because they've, you know,
so someone's vouched
for them.
Yeah, well, we know it's true.
Yeah,
you know, this is shown it's true. That's good. Well, look, you know, let's keep on top of this. This is really a wage claim.
Yeah.
You know, but it's done through unpaid wages through menace and threats.
Yeah.
That's what this is, right?
Yeah.
So we've got to knock these things on head, right? You know, our mission as a union is to stop exploitation and workplace abuse, and this is what it is.
Yeah.
And one by one, as we expose this and take the cases, then these employers will think twice. Well, hopefully they'll stop doing it, and that's our intention. But we do put more of the details on our website, so if people want to know more about the work we do, it's utu.org.nz, utu.org.nz. If you want to send us an email about these, about anything you know, it's just justice@utu.org.nz, or you can give us a phone call, 0800 368 000. So thank you, Armin, for coming in, and thanks for the work you're doing, brother.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Thanks, Matt and Armin. That brings us to our final song for the day, by another Bob, this time Dylan. But no disrespect to the poet laureate legend, I'm actually going to play a Stevie Wonder cover of Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind, because as any of our regular listeners might have realised by now, I'm pretty partial to the Motown sound. But the song, written of course by Bob Dylan, was released in 1962 and is widely regarded as the most popular protest song of all time. And Bob Dylan already had it under his belt by the time he was 21. One of the wonderful things about this song's lyrics is that while their general theme about peace, war and freedom can be traced, the overall meaning is open for interpretation in such a poetic way as to be applicable to all social justice movements. So to round off our show, a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Be sure to check us out on utu.org.nz, where you can join us, contact us or read more about the cases we cover. And until next week, here is Stevie Wonder's 1966 cover of Bob Dylan's wonderful song, Blowing in the Wind.
Yeah, it's blowing.